Hello, Scott Wells here for The Magic Word, and today is, what is it, today is the 30th of August, on Friday, and we are on the road, and I say we, that includes Jamie Salinas and myself, on the road to the Texas Association of Magicians, driving from Houston to Dallas, and here's Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, guys, how are y'all doing?
I don't think they're going to be able to. They can hear you, but they can't respond, so you don't know how they're doing, actually. They may be doing okay.
I can hear them. Oh. Hey, good to hear from you.
So I'm excited about the convention this year. One of the nice things is, of course, last year we had it in Houston, and both we kept very busy, all the planning and everything up to that point. This time we just get to go and enjoy the convention.
Yes and no. I'm punishing myself again. You know, I punished myself at the last convention. So this year I am a dealer, so I will be in a different capacity working and have, but I will have some fun.
I guess that's true. You will be behind the booth. Now you're working with Gene Protis too, is that correct?
Yes. Gene and I have a couple of products together, and then Gene has some products on his own. I do as well, and we have some dealer items.
And so, do you know about how many dealers are going to have this year? Did they tell you?
I know one important one. It's megahitsmagic.com, which is Gene and I. But I'm not really sure, you know. But as a magician, magic junkie, and one of the many that have the disease, I will be buying stuff myself.
That's a dangerous place for you to be. I mean, when you are a dealer and then you hang out in the dealer's room. One of the neat things usually about the TAOM, as most conventions have been going this way, and that is of having like a little seating area that you can kind of hang out in the dealer's room. So this way you can kind of, you know, talk with other friends. You can open up the packages and kind of practice and play with something, you know, while you're there as well.
Yeah, that gives people opportunity to show off, hey, what'd you get? Really? You got that at Mega Hits Magic booth? Oh, let me go get one of those too.
Yeah, or if you want to have then some sort of a demonstration, like if it didn't work exactly, I mean, you're right there at the dealer, you can walk back over and they can, you know, because usually you buy something after you've seen the demo, and so this way you can go back over and get some personal instructions on that. But, you know, they've got a lot of great talent. I'm looking forward to seeing Tom Mollica again. I know he's not doing magic any longer. We were in, Kathy and I went to the Abbott's get-together last year when, I think it was the 75th annual get-together, and Tom Mollica was there, and he was talking about how that he doesn't do magic, and that he was asked to do a card lecture, and he said, I don't remember, you know, what I did or how I did it. So he doesn't lecture on that kind of thing anymore. But I guess he's got his ventriloquist rabbit. I never, did you ever see his rabbit?
No, I've only seen Tom do his cigarette act. That's all I've ever seen.
Yeah. I had been down to Atlanta a couple times and seen him perform at Tomfoolery behind the bar, which is awesome, which I'd recommend that you need to take a look if you're interested in that kind of stuff, behind the bar type magic. Take a look at the book on Tomfoolery. I believe Mayor Yedid sells that book, but it has the entire routine actually scripted down to the minute. So it has, you know, minutes and hours and seconds, you know, as to, you know, when he did this and that. And then he explains the trick and everything, of course, in the book then as well. So that's going to be kind of cool then to see him. Of course, Johnny and Pam Thompson are going to be there. I'm curious to see what they're going to do exactly, because supposedly that he had retired his Thompsonian company Dove Act at the Magic Live convention here a couple of weeks ago. And then, let's see, who else? Alan Akawa. Haven't seen him in years. He was a friend of Roger Klaus's, and he's a guy who makes a really nice eelskin wallets. Have you got one of his wallets?
No, actually, I don't. I'm not really 100% a wallet junkie. I am a Peak wallet junkie. I've owned practically all of those, but that one I don't have.
Yeah, they're well-made and last for a very long time then as well. Let's see, Shin Lim. In fact, this afternoon, if we get to Dallas in time, Alan Okawa, I think, is the first lecture at 1:30, and then at 3:30 will be Shin Lim. And looking, I think Shin does a lot of manipulation, too. Do you know?
Actually, I've never seen him, so I'm really looking forward to it. I hear a lot of good things about him. And for me personally, I'm looking forward to seeing Harry Anderson.
That's right.
Yeah, Harry was the my first, you know, you get your magic cards printed up that says Mr. Magic with a rabbit coming out of the top hat and everything. Yeah, oh, the standard clip art. This was back before all the internet-based, business cards. So I had mine, and my first paid job was performing at a party for Harry Anderson. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's kind of cool. How did you come across that particular party?
I worked at NASA, and right outside of NASA in the Houston area, in Clear Lake Space Center area, there was a small restaurant, and I would eat there for lunch, and I would show the owner magic tricks, and, you know, I'd learn a new trick, run to the shop, you know, run to the dealer's booth, whatever the latest and greatest is, and I'd show him a trick and entertain him, and he says, hey, why don't you perform at my restaurant, and one thing led to another. I'm table hopping, and first week, a group comes in and says, hey, we're having this party, and a gentleman named Harry Anderson is going to be the guest of honor. Would you come and perform for us?
Wow.
So there you go.
Kind of reminds me, I guess, of Bill Goldman talking about how he got into trade shows. And he said, well, it's quite simple. I was working table-to-table in a restaurant, and there were a group of businessmen, and one of the guys asked me if I travel and do trade shows, and he said, yes, I do, and yes, I will. And I said, well, we got one coming up next week. Can you be there? And so they flew him out, and he's been doing them ever since. So a lot of times you just kind of fall into the right place at the right time, but the important thing is, I guess, just kind of being available, you know, for those kinds of things. Well, yeah, so Harry Anderson's going to be there. I know Chip Romero is going to be bringing a lot of his collection of Doug Henning memorabilia. He has purchased a lot of Doug Henning's illusions. I don't know how much of that he's actually going to be bringing or demonstrating, but he's going to be there. Let's see, who else
we got? Do you remember? Well, we got a couple of real good friends. Fred Becker, Fred and his wife will be there, and also Fred and Bobby, and John Schrock, John and Mary will be there as well.
John's coming, yeah.
Yeah. And so those are real good friends. I always look forward to seeing and talking, hanging out with them.
Yeah, we always work with them at the Magic Island here in Houston.
Right. And, of course, you can't have a TAOM convention without going to the contest and seeing Fumio. So I'm looking forward to seeing Fumio.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, he's a longtime winner of multi-winner, I guess, particularly the Comedy Award. First year he won that. Do you remember who his assistant was?
I don't.
She sat in the back seat. That's my wife, Kathy. Yeah, she was...
the one who keeps saying, put your eyes on the road and put that microphone out of my face.
That's the one. Yes.
That's the one.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, no backseat driving there.
Put your eyes back on the road.
Back here, you can.
So I wanted to ask you, Jamie, just on a non-convention issue, and that has to do with you being a reviewer, that you have been reviewing for the MUM magazine. Is that right?
Right. For a couple of years now, been reviewing products, mostly DVDs now, because that's generally what the marketplace has, a lot of DVDs. You know, get a few actual tricks themselves.
Now, how do you go about the review? I mean, do you actually set aside a time on a Sunday afternoon or some night, or then you say, I'm going to go and do this, and then you just watch all these DVDs, or how do you go about planning?
Well, again, I do have the magic disease. So when the package arrives in the mailbox, I rip it open before I even get inside the house, and I'm looking to see, what did I get? And then the first thing I do is open up the DVD and look for the gimmick, because I want to see the gimmick before I even see the DVD, especially the ones that say, do not open until you see the DVD first. Those are the ones I open first.
That's the way my wife is about Christmas gifts. She unwraps them and then puts them back together and under the tree, but she knows what's in. She does not like surprises.
Well, and of course, we all have our own styles and our own preferences, our own likes. So some of the stuff that I get is maybe not my style or my type of magic, but a lot of it is. So what I like to do is figure out, how can I perform this for real people, or when do I have the opportunity, because I want to give a good, fair review. You know, oftentimes we read something, like, for example, Doc Hilford. When I first read his material, I thought, this is junk. Nobody's going to believe this. This is a bunch of bull. Pipe dreams. And then I met Doc. I saw his performance, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is the real deal. Why was I so dumb not to believe this was, you know, workable material?
Right.
So a lot of stuff you have to perform in front of an audience. So a lot of the magic I get, 99% of it, I perform it in front of an audience to see what kind of reactions.
So you audience get. You audience test these then, actually, rather than just listening and thinking this probably will work?
Right, absolutely. There are a few things that I don't audience test, and I don't want to mention any products because they're just not my style. And but I, you know, from the years of experience, and I know how they're going to play. And so those few instances, I can write a review without actually performing it.
Now, the DVDs you receive, I assume, what, are mostly like on card tricks or mentalism, a little bit of everything, stage things, building, what?
Well, what they do with MUM is they try to figure out what our specialties are, what we like, and then they try to send us stuff that's more appropriate for us. You know, I'm pretty versatile. So I do children's magic, I do bizarre magic, I do mentalism, pretty much everything except gospel magic and illusions. Those are the only two things I don't do, but it pretty much cover everything else.
So you said that they send them to you. Does the editor send them to you, or do they come unsolicited from magicians?
They come straight from MUM magazine. Now, occasionally...
Which, by the way, I don't think they like to be called MUM. It's M-U-M, Magic Entertainment. I said that one time, I think, in front of one of the presidents of the SAM, and they said, I think they were going to charge me $5. It's like, hey, it's not MUM, it's M-U-M. Okay, just so... listeners know.
That was my Texican accent that you misplaced there, so that's really what I said, but yeah. Anyway, that's funny.
So they send them to you?
The products come directly to me from the magazine itself, from the editors, so they send it my way. Occasionally, if we're running low on material to review, they'll ask us, have you bought anything new that you'd like to submit a review for? So occasionally, a review will sneak in of stuff that we've bought. And at the end of the year, we also are encouraged to write about the best products that we bought for the year that you know, we want to mention, maybe something that was not submitted for review.
You know, we're coming close to the end of the year. Here it is, almost the first September. Well, certainly the end of summer. So what would you say to date would have been maybe the top one, two, or three things?
Well, I made a purchase last year. It's not something new. I'm going to mention it anyway, although this is not going to qualify for product of the year. In fact, you and I just talked about this product, and I shouldn't talk about it because I don't want other people to do it, but it is a great trick.
Yeah.
There's a company called Small Little Electronics Company, ProMystic. Have you heard of them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Craig Filicetti.
Craig makes the finest in electronics, and the guy's a genius, and he makes some really great stuff, and there's a trick called Color Match, and that's my favorite. I bought that last year and love the trick. I mean, it's a major part of my show now. The thing that I purchased this year, which I really like...
Apparently Howard Stern liked it also whenever that...
Eric
Dittleman used it, yeah.
Yeah, Eric used it on TV. I don't know the gentleman's name, but or know him personally, but... Justin Credible, what's his
name? Wilman, Justin Wilman, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen him do it.
Yeah, Justin did it on Ellen, and it's a fantastic presentation. There's a lot of variety you can do with it, but that's not going to fall into this year's category, but that is the best purchase I've made personally for this past year. The product for me that I have that I really like is going to be a close-up item. It is Nick Einhorn's Nested Wallets. Deluxe Nested Wallets are... I think is the official name.
Yeah,
it's a great trick. It's a utility item. I mean, any small object, ring, mark, coin vanishes, reappears inside a series of nested wallets inside a folded cloth. It's low tech. It's great tech, and it's a fooler.
So those are two things. Have you got another one in mind? Comes immediately to mind.
You know. What's surprising is a lot of the products now are one-trick DVDs, and, you know, myself included, fall in that category of, you know, producing those type of effects. But some of the stuff coming out of the UK has been really good that has a lot of variety. In other words, it's the older style of a DVD full of ideas, full of routines. Not really a card man, but there's a guy who put out Blood on the Tricks, and I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but he's an older gentleman. it gives you the feel of you're sitting there with at a magic club with a friend, and he's teaching you card tricks. And this guy is just incredible. And the value you get for your money is just so, you know, so great.
Now, again, you get mostly DVDs, and they do have other tricks and things that are being reviewed, I know, on the MUM, as well as, of course, Genie and Magic Magazine and The Linking Ring. They all have their trick reviews and everything. But, I've got a bunch of DVDs myself, including some that I have not opened yet, that I just haven't had the time. And I know that I have purchased them because that there was something on there that I saw in a particular magician's lecture that I enjoyed, and I wanted to learn that particular trick, but I just never got back to it. You know, there are a lot of things, I think, that we purchase, particularly in the dealer's room, or when you see them demonstrated in the dealer's room or online or something, that you think, oh, I've got to have that, you know, and then it's like buyer's remorse later. I mean, that's fine, but it's not something that I end up using a lot. I'm trying to cut back on that, but it sounds like you still have the disease. You buy a lot also.
Well, you know, there's two purchases I make. One that's going to go, I know that's going to go on the show. Right? Well, let me break it down. I'm sorry, there's three purchases. One, I know that's going to go on the show. Two, something that might go on the show. And three, it's just something for myself. You know, it's something to entertain me.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, I bought the dancing cane long, long time ago when I first started magic. Performed it forever in front of a mirror in my bedroom when I lived with my parents. Never ever saw a real audience. It never got added to my shows or anything. But I mean, there's some things you just perform for yourself just for the enjoyment, and that's just because that's the business we're in. The beauty, though, is by learning all these different new tricks, you learn ideas, you learn methods, and then later on, when something comes up, you have all these ideas and methods filed away in your mind, and that's how new ideas, new routines come about. I mean, I was joking around about plugging earlier, but the trick that I have, you know, it's what's called Lotto Fever, but basically it's a lottery prediction, and it uses old principles combined together from inspirations from other performers I've seen that, you know, hey, it would be great to do this or that kind of touch, and, you know, and just, you know, put it all together, and that's what happens.
Yeah. I think that certainly makes the best presentations, whenever that you can take different ideas of things that you have learned or seen and kind of say, okay, well, if I did it this way or use this technique, you know, like with, again, something that you can purchase that might be a prop, but rather than doing it the way that it was demoed, you can then move it around a little bit, you know, put your own personality and everything into it, plus, you know, maybe even add another gimmick to it or a fold or something that changes it pretty dramatically, I think. Well, anyhow, this is going to be a great convention. Going to be having a lot of guys we'll be hopefully getting to chat with while we're there. Hope I can get a chance maybe to pull Harry Anderson aside. If you were going to ask Harry Anderson a question, what would you like to ask him?
Well, number one, I'd like to find out, you know, at one point he was the king of the comedy clubs. I'd like to find out if he's interested in ever doing that again, just for not necessarily monetarily reasons, but just for the love of the art and that type of environment. So I'd like to find out his experience about the comedy clubs in that time. You know, it's kind of like when Steve Martin wrote his book about the memoirs about, you know, growing up in the comedy business and that dedication and, you know, and everything else. So that's probably what I'd like to talk to him about.
Hmm. Yeah, I would like to know that as well. So if I get a chance to pull him aside, I have to ask you about comedy club work. All right. Well, I think it's going to be kind of wrapping it up for now. I'll keep my eyes back on the road.
Watch out for the car!
Oh.
Ah!
I think you frightened Kathy back there. So for now, that was Jamie. And I think you might have heard Kathy back there. I think she might have wet her pants just a little bit. This is Scotty out. So, we have just checked into the hotel, and we are here at the Intercontinental Hotel, and the TAOM has begun. Actually, I missed the
first lecture, which was by
Alan
Okawa.
Okawa.
Yeah, and I'm anxious to see him then again. Right now, Shin Lim is on, and so, but I do have somebody I'd like to you guys to say hello to, and that's my buddy Diamond Jim Tyler. Hey, Diamond Jim.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good, thank you. So glad that you're here. So
yeah.
You're not going to be working this convention.
Just hanging out. This is my home,
yeah.
You know, stomping ground. So
yeah. The expert's always somebody from out of town, isn't it?
That's right. You can never be a hero in your own hometown.
Hold on. So anyhow, sorry, just put that on pause for a moment just to finish because Bill Irwin is walking up, and I wanted Bill to say hello also. Hello, Bill.
Hello!
And he is going to be the president next year in Fort Worth, your current vice president. And as you guys wouldn't know this but necessarily, but you are now going to be the first two-time president, is that right? Weren't you president in Lubbock?
No, I ran the ones in Lubbock.
Oh, like you were, I thought you were president. It seemed like because you were everywhere back then.
I ran those two, yes.
Yeah.
Something about a two-timer.
I was... I was about to go.
Hey, Diamond, there. We're not telling that story.
Okay. And so we have some things lined up for next year, I assume, that
we're
already?
We have some, excuse me, we have some fun things. We've got, I'm really going for anybody who wants to be rounded out. You want to get some your street stuff ready. You want to get your table stuff ready. You want to get your stand up or your stage stuff ready. We've got somebody that's going to match you. Master Payne. We've got Roland and Sarlot. We've got Shell, one of the best street performers now in the last 5 years, has come along. We've got guys that want to help develop you.
Interesting. So the theme will be just instruction, basically, kind of thing?
No. It's just that's the way they keep talking to me about it. They say, we want to do this. We want to show them how we can develop character, how we can script out your act, how to go to a next level.
I see.
And so it's going to turn out to be, you're going to watch some great performers, and hopefully you'll learn how to take your level, your act, to the next step.
And the website's not open yet, but will be after this convention, is that right?
That, yes.
Okay.
Technically, it's not open.
So I really don't want to announce that yet, but on Sunday or Monday, I will announce that, and we'll post that on my website, too. So
that's right.
There
so if you go to TAM2014.com, you may be able to see something
now.
Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah, don't do that until
for
Sunday.
Now.
Don't hit that yet. You can't register until Sunday.
No, but we're not going to stop.
Exactly. Okay. That sounds like it's going to be some fun. And so a lot of other surprises to come.
Very much so.
We don't want to announce too much.
We've got actually about 12 people set up already and another.
Did he call you Diamond Jim about coming?
No, me either.
I don't think
we've got this long list. He's on there, though.
We're on the bottom. We're on the list.
Oh, man, now you're making me feel
better. Putting you on the spot.
I have
yes.
thought about them.
Yes. Yeah, well, now we feel better. Yeah, much better. Yeah.
Thank you, Scott.
That's right. So will the shows all be in the same hotel? Are they going to have a theater or what?
No. We actually want a theater experience. You know, nothing wrong with the ballrooms, but we are going to Casa Manana. It's a beautiful theater. There's not a bad seat in the whole house. I've walked the entire thing. They're all, you feel like you're right next to the stage.
Which one is it?
Casa Manana.
Okay.
And it's a renovated in the round sort of theater. Just gorgeous. It glows inside. It's got this dome, and it's just beautiful. And you can't help but have a good experience there. Every seat is fantastic.
And the hotel will be?
The Worthington.
That's just walking distance. It's like just two blocks from there, isn't it?
No, we're actually, that's going to be one of the, we're going to have to bus.
Okay.
But that's how you get the theater experience. If we don't have a theater that we can walk to,
we
got to take you there.
Oh, nice.
That would be great.
So it's going to be a cool experience. The theater's great. They want to work with us. It's a beautiful experience, and it gives us a chance to get real stage performers up there. Not that others aren't, but these makeup stages are kind of hard to work on when they're 12 feet deep and 40 feet wide, and you got to limit yourself to whatever there is space-wise.
Let me give you a suggestion, by the way, then, too. It's Arthur Benjamin, who is the mathematician. Yeah, I worked with him in Bristol.
Yeah, I looked him up a year ago.
I was the MC for a show.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
And he's going to be back in the States. He's in sabbatical over in England, but he'll be back in the U.S. for next year. He'll be back later, maybe back now. I think he came back in July. Anyhow, just an idea.
Well, no, I like that because I was aware that He was
always different. Yeah.
Very different. He's, as you know, he's got a great act.
And that's what I'm going for. The people I'm looking for aren't They're characters. We're mixing them up,
yeah.
You're going to be able to learn, and you're going to be able to watch and get used to that personality, because we're not doing 6-minute acts. I'm not going to have a dozen 6-minute acts up there.
Not a big variety.
It's going to be a big variety, but it's going to be the variety of the performers themselves. It's going to be a nice experience. You're going to be able to experience those performers.
Nice.
Yep. Very excited about that.
They're
excited. Everyone I've talked to said, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
Diamond Jim, back over to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask you just about, since you are relaxing, you know, it's easy to catch you now.
Yes.
You know, since a lot of times, like when we were in Phoenix, that you were lecturing several times, I think.
Yeah. At IBM in Phoenix, I think I did 9 shows and 3 lectures. Yeah.
I was going to say, and you were just one of the off-the-hook lecturers, I mean, being all over the world. I mean, every country and continent, and tell us about some of your experiences here.
Sure. Well, it's been busy. I just got back from working the Midwest Magic Jubilee.
Yep.
Haven't done that in 12 years in St. Louis. That was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was at the Castle for a week. I think you were just there as well.
Yep.
And I always enjoy performing at the Castle.
Oh, yeah. But great audience.
The day after TOM, I leave to do a 21-city tour across the U.K., and I believe you did that recently as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, in the last 5 years, I've done like 21 countries. And so it's just a blast to see all these places and get paid to do what we love. And
yeah, that's the advantage of being a magician. Yeah,
and I try to drive it all, too, and do it all. I love to be able to stop and go and when I want to. And so.
Well, certainly that was a nice thing, you know, about in England, that it was a country that's, you know, smaller than Texas.
And the nice thing about the air is when you drive on the wrong side of the road, they don't scream at you like they do here.
Yeah, kind of used to that. So,
I like to travel abroad. I mean, sometimes I'll go as a man, but, I mean, it's fun, so.
But sometimes traveling as abroad, yeah. But I liked it, the travel as well. I said it was smaller than Texas because whenever I would drive from one place to the other, they say, oh man, it's going to be a 2-hour drive. Well, that's just across Houston.
I know. Yeah.
You know, so you got to get used to that kind of thing.
That's 3 hours away.
That's a long way from there. Yeah, so I think I can make it, you know.
Yeah.
I know that you've had just a lot of experiences. My question would be, without showing favoritism to one to the other, is there something that is a unique experience or a location or someplace that may not necessarily even have been at a lecture, may have just been the city itself or the museums or the experience, something that's really...
In Spain, I remember in Bilbao, this old world...
That's Portugal, isn't it?
Bilbao's in Spain.
In Spain? Okay.
Yeah, and I did Portugal as well, Lisbon and Porto. But I did this drive, and it's this old ancient town with these cobblestone-type streets. And then right in the middle of it is this Guggenheim Museum that looks like an alien spacecraft that's landed there.
Now, did you happen upon that or just accidentally?
And I happened upon it.
Wow.
And it had some of the most amazing exhibits I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
One was 100 wolves running up an invisible bridge, crashing into an invisible wall. And all these wolves were built by hand. Every hair. They were not even real wolves, you know, but they looked like. And so
they're invisible.
They were real wolves running up an invisible bridge, 100 of them, crashing into an invisible wall.
Now I can visualize it.
And
okay,
so it was very interesting. And let's see, I'm trying to. I love museums.
Yeah.
And so when I travel, I try to hit all the museums.
I'm with you on that.
And
yeah.
So. Other stops. Gosh, I love Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Sherlock Holmes nut, so when I went to Switzerland, I stopped in a little town called Meringen, and that was Conan Doyle's favorite vacation spot.
Hmm.
And that's where he wrote the finale where Sherlock and Moriarty falls, and that's where the Rockenbach Falls are.
Right. That's
so I climbed to the top of those falls, you know, and there's a plaque up there that actually commemorates,
this
you know, where Sherlock fell to his death, and actually... When I die, I told my wife, that's where I want my ashes to go into those falls.
Wow.
Because the cool thing about that story is, you know, Sherlock really didn't die.
Correct. He did come back because his readers were saying... Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They demanded him back.
Yes,
and so Conan Doyle figured out a way to bring him back to life in a logical manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so and Conan Doyle loved a vacation there. And so that's why he put that climactic... You know, seen there.
Because it's outside of London.
So I stayed at the Sherlock Holmes Hotel and did all the geeky stuff.
It's funny. I had this conversation with Terry Seabrook so many years ago about the relationship the magicians have with Sherlock Holmes. And it's not unusual. I think the more magicians you talk to, the more that you'll find that there is this connection. And I think it has to do with intuition.
And a lot of deductive reasoning.
Deductive reasoning, exactly.
And I've learned a lot about magic from reading Sherlock.
Mm-hmm. And being very conscientious of your surroundings, you know, when you're doing mentalism or whatever, you know, of noticing things that other people don't seem to notice.
And structuring routines.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that way you can take out, I mean, I think he said it once to Watson. He said,
eliminate.
Yeah, when you, well, not just that, but he says if you remove the, like, the center facts, if you start with something and have the ending, it creates this meretricious effect where it seems impossible, it seems amazing. How could you know this? Mm-hmm. For example, in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, Watson comes in and he says, I notice that you're not going to be investing in the such and such properties. And he says, how could you possibly know that? He said, I noticed between the groove between your index finger and thumb. He said, I don't see any connection. He said, well, you went out playing billiards tonight with your friend, right? He said, yeah. He said, when you go to play billiards, use chalk to ease the cue.
Right.
He's like, true. He said, well, I noticed you had chalk there. Your friend is the one that was talking to you about investing in these properties. And since you never asked for the key to get the checkbook out of the drawer, I assume that you're not investing in such and such property. He goes, well, that's, you know, so easy. He goes, well, it is now that I've explained it
exactly.
to you.
Which is like a magic trick, right? Once you explain it, so, well, it is easy.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting. And so from here, you have some other plans, I mean, other than just professional and private work around home and travel, but are you going to be doing some more lectures? Or?
Yeah, got some more tours lined up for the future. I'm trying to hit, I've done 40 of the 50 states. I'm trying to knock out the other 10, hopefully in the next couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got some more traveling overseas that I'll do, but Bamboozlers 3 just came out.
I love it. I bought it.
I just came out a couple months ago, and then I'm already writing Bamboozlers 4, and I have lots
of... That's going to be a never-ending...
It's a never-ending thing, and so, and I've got lots of DVD projects. I'd like to do a one-man show in Dallas, so
I've
got a lot of things coming up.
On the burner.
So, yeah, all good stuff.
Okay, well, let me ask you as I start to close down. And Bill, since you're still hanging around here then, too, let me ask both of you. The title of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word? It wouldn't necessarily have to be like abracadabra or something that you would use in the context of a show, but specifically it could be, you know, your motto, your chi, you know, your life slogan, something that is important to you.
Let's see. I think, have you ever seen the movie Jerry Maguire?
Sure.
He talks about the Quan.
Yeah.
I think that's my magic word, the Quan.
Quan.
Yeah, so.
Okay, well, there's an inside thing that people have to, if they haven't seen the movie, they're going to have to go and dig
that's
for
that. That's a great movie. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Mine's simpler. It's just family. But family can be outside.
You were reading my mind, because as I looked at you, I was going to say, like family. But I thought, I bet he says that, because I know what a family man you are.
That is.
And that is important.
It
that's
is,
true.
And it's so much fun watching kids develop. And family can be friends, too. So it doesn't. It's not just limited to...
and that's what we're doing here. I mean, you know, this is a family thing. You know, the TLM, year after year, we see the same people, you know.
That's it.
And it's like coming to see family, you know, and it's extended family, that's for sure.
The secondary theme of our convention is new magic, new performers, renewed friendships. And that's part of it.
That sounds great. Looking forward to next year. Looking forward to this year right now, since it's just getting started. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it a lot.
Thank
so, for now, from the TLM, on day one, Scotty out. All right, well, I've kind of walked down the hall, and they're getting something ready here for later this evening. It's going to be a kind of a midway type of fun thing. Right now I've got Bruce Wahlstad, who is with me, because he is setting up, it looks like, a Museum of the Weird or something. Hey there, Bruce, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. I call it the old-time sideshow of curiosities, oddities, and urban legends.
Because it's all of the above.
Yes, absolutely correct.
Now, these are things you've collected, obviously, not since last week, but you have procured over the years.
It's odd. I didn't even know I had a collection until a few years ago. I buy this nonsense. I bring it home and put some of it in my den, and some of it goes in a closet. And a couple of years ago, Andy Dallas from the SAM called me and said, can you bring your collection of sideshow gaffes in? And I said, I don't have a collection. He said, oh, yes, you do. So I've done this three or four times now, and I love it. It's one of the few times I get to actually show off, you know, I don't have everything here, but a good majority of the nonsense that I have here.
Right. Well, just without walking through, just a couple of things, just kind of tell us that some of the people out there Radio Land?
Sure. Well, I've got all sorts of alien artifacts. I've got parts from a crashed spaceship. I've got a couple aliens in bottles here. Mm-hmm. I've got some things like in the urban legends. Remember the old story about the guy who escaped from the mental institution who had the hook?
Had the hook, sure.
And the lover's line. I've got the hook. No, that's a true story.
It was hooked on the handle,
on the door,
of the car.
That actually happened here in Texas. And I've actually got it. It was confiscated from the police department, and I've actually received that from evidence. I've got that. I've got things like Czechoslovakian fang slugs, which are very nasty creatures. I've got giant bed bugs. I've got, I got all sorts of Bigfoot things. I've got Bigfoot hair. I've got a baby Bigfoot that was caught in a live trap. I've also got the mummified head of the Marquis de Sade. I've got a rat man caught in a trap. I mean, you name it, it's here.
You said something about Dillinger's trigger finger.
Oh yeah, well yeah. In that area, I think I got things like John Dillinger's trigger finger from the Cook County Morgue.
Yeah,
I've got Michael Jackson's nose, and I got Marilyn Monroe's six toe. Someone's got to have it. It was found in a storage locker. Her six toe was actually found in a storage locker in Hollywood, in a beautiful little case.
Which you've anticipated my next question, because I'm sure people always ask you, how do you go about procuring and where do you get all these things?
Well. Actually, a few of these things I manufactured myself.
Okay.
My granddaughter, who's 8 years old, actually made like the wood fairy there, the common wood fairy.
Yeah.
She actually makes those.
Huh.
And then I have a couple guys that I know that manufacture these things or make them. Everything here is handmade.
Yeah.
And they're, most of them are one of a kinds. And it's just fun nonsense. I mean, I've always loved this kind of silliness and have just collected these things over the years. And
buy things on eBay?
Actually, yeah, a few of these things have come off eBay. You're correct. That's right. But there's a couple of guys. There's a guy in Florida that makes them. There's another guy up in Georgia that makes some of the stuff I have here. And like I said, it's a lot of nonsense, but it's a lot of fun. I'll tell you what I find amusing is I'll get people to come by and look, and they'll look at five or six things and laugh at them. And well, they'll get to that seventh or eighth thing and go, now this is real, isn't it? Because I've read about this.
Yeah.
And they're dead serious.
Yeah.
I mean, the first five or six won't fool them, but that seventh or eighth one... They believe that one.
After a while.
Yeah, no. They've read about that, and they know it to be real.
Oh, I see.
So I just find that amusing sometimes, you know, the way people will...
discount certain things until it comes to something that in their recollection
is real.
In their world of reality.
Yeah, and it's funny. You know. So I find that amusing. But it's all in good fun, and everyone seems to enjoy this kind of silliness, especially magicians for some reason. I guess it goes akin to what we do.
Fooling people.
There you go.
Now, we hear a lot of construction kind of going on in the background. What else is going to be going on over here?
Oh, boy, they're setting up games. Matter of fact, I brought some of my carnival games with over there. They're running games out there. They've got a 5-in-1 show.
It's like the milk bottles and pitcher.
Knock down the milk bottles. They've got it all out there. I will admit to you this. Some of these games you can win, and some you don't have a chance.
Now, I understand there's going to be a late-night lecture tonight about that very thing.
Yeah, 10:30 tonight. I'm doing a lecture.
You're the one giving the lecture on games you can't win.
Yeah, well, it's more of a... This is only the third time I've done this outside law enforcement. Because I do classes around the country for law enforcement about how to detect these types of games.
Yeah.
And I think this is only the third time I've ever done. So I have to change my delivery because it...
We're not professional law enforcement people.
Yeah, but I'm trying to train them what to look for and how to deal with the carnival people, et cetera.
Yeah, three-card money. The police are looking for a certain thing other than what the magicians are looking for. We're looking for the moves.
Right, right. So I teach them about the games and which games are allowable on the midway and which aren't. But I always leave it up to them. You know, I tell them it's your decision. But I show them a game and tell them basically you make a decision. You know, here's the statistics of a game. You know, I got one game over there. It takes the average player 6,011 turns to win.
Wow.
Okay. And your chances of winning in one turn are like 27 billion to one. So you decide whether you would allow that game or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of them are gaffed by their mechanics. Some are gaffed by mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Some are by the angles of some of these devices. You know, it's all very interesting. So tonight you'll get a little lesson about all that.
That does sound pretty cool. I remember one of the games, of course, where you throw this ring over something and it's supposed to settle around a square block.
Hoopla blocks.
Hoopla blocks,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
But really the... They show that you can actually win that, but...
You can't.
You can't.
I've got a set of those from the H.C. Evans Company, and in the earlier catalogs, from the early 1900s, that's how old this game is, 100 years old,
wow.
They advertise it as the only safe method for the concessionaire to use valuable prizes. So you read into the translation of that. And
yeah.
But they can fool people with it because you can win. They can show you can win, but in reality you can't. The way the block is structured. I mean, they can demonstrate it, but not from the position the player throws.
That's what I thought, because they place the thing on there and say, see that you can tell that the block will allow the ring to pass
right,
around.
Right.
But then
you come from the back side. You come from the front side.
Oh.
You can't do it.
That's because of this kind of a.
It's like a
obelisk or
about
something.
About a 45 degree angle.
And angle. Yeah.
Actually, the top of the block is larger than the hoop. With the angle cut.
Okay. So, I see. So you can't throw it in the front. That makes sense because of...
Yeah. So anyway, it's going to be a fun night. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to my lecture tonight, too.
Well,
like
surely.
I said, I rarely do it outside law enforcement. So like I said, I have to change my way of thinking sometimes.
Yeah.
Of not teaching guys about it, you know, just showing them how to have, you know... Well, I will teach you guys tonight, you know, hey, here's an idea. You know, don't play these games. And guys always ask me, well, how do you beat these games? I tell them, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't beat these guys at their own game. Here's my best advice. Don't play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't play. And if you do, you know, I'll tell you, Scott, the best games of player where you play against other players.
Yes.
In other words, like the water balloon race.
Right.
Stuff
because
like
somebody's
going to
win.
Somebody's going to win. And the carny doesn't care because he's got maybe 9 spots or 10 spots. Each person pays $3 to play. Whatever say that. He grosses $30. He gives away a $10 prize.
Mm-hmm.
He don't care. He makes $20 every time he runs the game.
Yeah.
But a lot of these games out there, I mean, they're treacherous. I had a chief of police friend call me about 2 weeks ago. And he said, Bruce, his language was rather graphic, and he said, I can't believe I allowed these games in. I didn't inspect them. And he had 2 or 3 citizens complaining to him that they had lost hundreds of dollars on a particular game.
And they continue to play even though they were losing, thinking that they were eventually going to win.
Yeah, they're going to win their money back. They're going to get more money. They're going to get, you know, this, that. But it goes on every day. I mean, as of 2 weeks ago, they were still running some of these bad. I mean, they're everywhere.
Sure, yeah. They're around the world, not just in the U.S.,
right.
You know, then as well.
Correct.
Do
absolutely.
You ever... Have you gone overseas and seen some of these games over there?
But it's the same games. It's just different.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Every Kearney, you know, the bushel basket game, for example.
Okay.
It's the same basic premise, but every Kearney runs it differently.
And the bushel basket is where you toss a ball.
And it has to stay in the basket.
Yes, well, otherwise it'll bounce out.
Right, right. Yeah. So you got to put 2 in to win or whatever the guy's rules are. As a matter of fact, there's a very... I got mine sitting right over there, my bushel basket game. And,
I remember playing that when I was back in the... A long time ago, in the 60s or 50s.
Yeah. And it all depends on the way it's set up.
Yeah.
You know, if it's set up in a such a way, it's impossible to win.
Mm-hmm.
But he can demonstrate it all day long.
I was going to say, he shows it how it works.
Oh, yeah, but he leaves a ball in there. I'll demonstrate all this.
Okay,
tonight.
Okay.
But I'll tell you an interesting thing, Scott. I'll be doing a class where I've got a bunch of guys in law enforcement, you know, and I'll be talking about a particular game, and all of a sudden you'll see one of the guys get like an angry look on his face and then slap himself in the forehead. And I go, you want to tell us about your experience? And they'll stand up, you're darn right, I want to tell you. When I was a kid, I lost about $100 on that game. But I get that reaction all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So. And a lot of the carnival people dislike me.
Got a contract out on you, huh?
I don't think it's that bad. But you know what? I like a carnival, and I don't mind the games as long as they run them fair. And
now,
people have a
when you go to,
win.
To the police officers, do you go in advance of when a carnival is going to be coming into town, or do you have a circuit as you go on?
It all depends.
They call you?
Yeah, well, I've done it for individual departments, or I've done it for a county. A few times I've done it when there's a big fair coming in. It all depends, you know. Most of the time when I do run these classes, the officers in there will all come in with stories to tell about last year's experiences.
Yeah.
You know, where they were really bad and a lot of people got clipped for money.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So.
Well, as I start to close over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word?
My magic word?
Wouldn't be like necessarily like abracadabra or something. You know, something that you live by. What is it that's important to you? What do you live by? What's your slogan, your mantra, your chi?
Life is good.
Life is good.
Life
I wouldn't have expected you to say that because I think watch out for cheaters or something, you know.
No,
but life is good.
Life is good. I have a good life and I can't complain about it.
You got a great attitude, a good outlook. That's
well,
good.
You know what? People pay me to put this stuff out and they pay me to talk about my carnival games. You know, I mean,
life is good.
Life is good. That's
there we
life.
Go. There we go. That's Bruce Wallstead for The Magic Word. This is Scotty out. So, this is Scott Wilson, Magic Word there again, and we're now kind of over in the lobby, and as I had just finished an interesting discussion that you just heard there with Bruce Wallstead about games you can't win, I'm now over here with a magician who can't lose, and that's got to be Fielding West. Hey, Fielding.
Well, I'm glad to be called a non-loser. That's the best thing I've heard all day. Hey, listen, can you believe I have to comment, we're in downtown Dallas, Texas, but we're in the International. Can you believe how beautiful this hotel
Intercontinental,
is?
Intercontinental, yes.
Intercontinental, there you go. I should get the name right if I'm going to be plugging these guys. The Intercontinental Hotel is absolutely gorgeous, and we got magicians coming out of our ears here.
Here's one right now. Ears one. Yes. Well, I have to agree. This is my favorite hotel, and I would say also because my son and daughter-in-law both work here.
I did not know this.
Yes, they do. Yeah. My my daughter-in-law is in charge of the restaurant over there. My son's security here.
My goodness.
So you get kind of rowdy night, he's knocking on the door.
I'll walk the straight and narrow while I'm here. But I went in there today and had I had the food, and everybody was very nice. And that's your daughter-in-law that runs that place?
Yeah.
There?
Yep.
Fantastic.
Her name's Jamie, so you have to look for Jamie.
I'll look
just
for Jamie, and I'll tell her I know her father-in-law.
That's right. And so, yes, I thank you very much for being on the podcast when we talked last time. We were in Phoenix at the IBM convention, I think that was. And so here we are now at the TAOM. You're going to be lecturing here as you did there?
You're going to be giving a lecture. Oh, that's right. I did a lecture over there. You know what? I've just got to tell you. I went to Abbott's The Gathering this year, first time.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Las Vegas for 34 years. Okay. I've lived there for 34 years, and I've never been to Magic Live. I just did a Magic Live.
That was
fun. With
a
live demonstration of psychic surgery.
I was there. I saw that.
Did you come up and see that?
Yeah.
I missed my favorite line. I'm pulling all these parts and the blood and everything's running off this guy, and they told me, they said, right in the middle of this, don't forget to tell everybody we're going to take a lunch break in 20 minutes, which would have been the best line,
yes,
and
exactly.
I forgot to do it because I was carried away. And now here I am at TAOM for the very first time.
Are you going to be doing a psychic surgery?
No, surgery here. I'm doing my show on Saturday night. Is Tom Mullica emceeing? I don't know what the rundown is. I know Johnny Thompson's on the show. I'm on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked around this place to see all the famous magicians here? Mullica's here.
Yeah.
He does the
cigarette.
He does the Red Skelton show.
Yes,
and,
right.
And, I mean, he's going to be doing his impression of Duke Stern. So he's doing the Duke Stern.
And Duke's the name of his rabbit, I think, isn't it?
His rabbit, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Named after Duke Stern, the famous magician.
Yeah. Exactly. Because he was brought up on magic there at Abbott. In fact, used to work at Abbott's. I think back they were building illusions way back when. Tom Mullica did,
and of course he came up with some of the most famous comedy magicians in our business. And I'm sitting here trying to remember.
Like Carol Fox.
Carol Fox, thank you very much. Yeah. Carol Fox and Ab Dixon.
Yeah.
There you
can't
go.
Can't say one without the other.
No, absolutely. But boy, do we have a rich history in comedy.
We really do. And, you know, that was, in a way, kind of sad but exciting to see Johnny and Pam do their Thompsonian Company act for the last time.
Exactly.
You know, there at Magic Live.
Well, you know what I always say to Johnny? I said, is this the last time you're going to do this? It just depends on what I'm getting paid.
Depends on what I'm having for dinner.
You're like Cher. This is the Cher going away tour. It's been going on for 14 years now.
Yeah, the so long tour.
So long tour.
So long as I get paid.
So long. There's a lot of truth in that statement.
And so you're going to be doing that, and then from here, are you kind of finished with the convention season? You go back to real work or what?
Actually, because my corporate season starts up in the fall, so I've got a lot of corporate dates, and then I have. And then we get on to a series of. I put a show together with myself, a juggler, a ventriloquist, and an impressionist. And what we've done is we've booked ourselves out through several of the Indian casinos throughout the Southwest.
Oh.
And so we go in for a night to two nights, depending on what their budget is. And they do it as a show for the high rollers, or they do it for the patrons of the casino.
Sure.
And we get crowds like anywhere from 35 to 4,500 people. They put us in their main room where they have their bands and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a 75-minute show, 75, 80-minute show. And it's just turned out to be a whole nother career for me because I hadn't planned to be doing that, but it's better than working 5 days a week, two shows a night, working as an act spot. And here I'm doing an act spot, but I'm doing a little more time with my friends. And
are you emceeing also? Or?
No, I've got a guy named David Gee who is an impressionist who just finished doing a Showtime special with Rita Rudner, and it's called My Three Ex-Husbands is the name of the Rita Rudner special.
Yeah.
And David Gee happened to be the impressionist that was on the special. I personally have known David for probably 28, 29 years. We worked in shows in Vegas But I saw him and I said, you know, I need an MC, and I've got this. I've got several of these Indian reservations. Can you come do this? Oh, we met. And of course, everybody's looking for work now, so sure. This has turned out to be a good thing for all of us.
Yeah. And so you're going around to several reservations, or you stay like on one hotel?
We're
like
doing
for
several.
Several. Okay.
Several.
Well, so like a tour.
It's like a you know what? It didn't start off that way. It started off as one. Then all of a sudden, somebody else heard about it, and they said, well, we'd like you at the end of November. And then someone else said, well, what are you doing in December? And then someone said, what about January? And then we got two in February. And then all of a sudden, this is, I'm going, hey, it's nice to know that we're booking work for, you know, and now it's not getting up every day like a car salesman and trying to go out and make your due, but it's working out very well.
So is it a 1 month, 1 week, 1 weekend, or just a show
it's,
per?
It's one night, two nights.
Okay, gotcha.
Depending on the budgets, but they're very fat budgets, so it's worked out for all the performers.
Well, you know, the showroom where you're performing with Michael Finney for his, Desert Dry Heat Classic.
Dry Heat, right.
Well, we had like 1,400 people, I think, you know. And,
is that what that
each evening. Yeah,
no,
he brought
so
in.
That was fantastic.
A ton of people. Yeah, that was.
He let me start the year, and he let me kick it off this year right after the guy came out and did the paintings of Elvis and whatnot.
That was on Friday or Saturday? Friday night, then.
Is it Friday or Saturday?
It was Saturday, I think, because I saw you Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I missed the Friday night show, but I came in on Saturday.
It was a Saturday night show, and I got to be the opening act, and I got to do the bird out of the cannon trick.
That was, haven't seen that in years, and golly, I think I may have seen it on TV, or did you do that, in
for
Vegas?
For the people that don't know this,
why don't you explain,
take a dove, and we put him in a small cannon. And I get a lady out of the audience, and she fires the cannon, and I catch the bird between my teeth. It's my homage to Penn and Teller's bullet catching routine.
And animals are harmed.
No, well, this one every once in a while. No animals are harmed. I'm a big animal lover, and I wouldn't do anything to hurt an animal. But the effect, magically, and it is a magic trick, so to speak, but it looks pretty wild, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like you're really pulling the head off.
That's right. I had that part, too.
Yeah. How did you develop that act?
My bird act, where I produce the bird, squish the bird, bring him back, then remove his head, put his head back on, and the bird's never harmed in any way.
Mm-hmm.
When I met Johnny Thompson, I was at the Sands Hotel, and I was opening for a group called... John K. and Steppenwolf. You remember Born to Be Wild?
Sure,
remember
Steppenwolf. Yeah, sure.
So here I am in a show with...
their LPs, which are those old wax record things. way back
The kids don't know what you're talking about.
No.
It's like a real big CD.
Yeah, except it's made of wax.
Made of wax, that's exactly right.
They don't know if they know what CDs are, these MP3s.
Oh my goodness.
We're dating ourselves, man.
Well,
okay, so, no, I'm not dating you.
I'm not dating you. I got a wife, too.
We're on the same page.
But not that that's a bad thing.
Yeah. So, not there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. So I'm opening for Steppenwolf, and I used to do five doves. I'd come out and produce five birds.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny,
a serious act, not
serious.
A comedy.
You were like
Doug or Lance Burton, huh?
I was trying to do comedy with doing five birds.
Okay.
And Johnny saw me, and he said, you know that one thing that you do with that one bird, where you squish him, and then you pull his head off, and then you do. I says, you don't need four other birds to do this. You don't need a bird cage. You don't need to put them in there. Then make the cage disappear. Everybody's doing this.
Yeah.
Let's do something original. And as a mentor, he literally we had to figure out step by step how that was going to work. And then after doing it since 1982, all the material, the lines, the jokes, all that kind of came as most things come. It comes through experience. You just do it.
Yeah.
And then the lines come out, and the best lines come out on the worst nights, because something goes wrong.
That's a good idea.
That's the truth. And I always tell the young performers, do not be afraid to fail. Go out there. You want to fail as many times as you possibly can, because that's where the gold comes from. That's where the great lines. You'll walk off stage, you'll be so upset, but if you just leave your mind up and you go, gee, I should have said this. The moment you get that thought in your mind, you write that down.
Right.
And the next time you go out, you use that line. And guess what? After you've done this for several years, you've got a solid gold line. Michael Gaudeau has a thing that was reprinted in Penn Jillette's book. He's got a new book out. And what it's called is Michael Gaudeau refers to show business as Groundhog Day. Remember the movie Groundhog Day?
Yeah. Same day over and
over. Michael's theory on show business is you walk out on stage every night in front of a crowd.
Right.
You can't see them. They can see you. They've got the lights in your eyes. And you go out and you perform the same act every single night.
Right.
And you have the opportunity over all these periods of after all this repetition, to finally get it right, to get it perfect. And that's what he refers to show business as Groundhog Day. You're going out, you're being paid to go out
right.
and do that act over and over and over and over again until it's perfect. And he's right, because if you do it long enough, it actually gets good.
Like in Bill Murray's case, I remember he learned to play the piano, he spoke various languages, because every day.
He picked up something that would make him a better person.
Right.
And he also learned how to be a human being.
Right.
And that's what a lot of performers, and I know performers say, well, gee, you're funny and you're naturally funny or you're this or that. No, I was never naturally funny. I had to learn that timing. I had to learn that. And I learned it with a metronome, which I used to.
Did you really?
I put a metronome and click, 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 and I said, okay, this is the timing. And I got this idea from Sandy Hackett, Buddy Hackett's son, in Vegas. We'd go watch Buddy Hackett, and we'd stand in the wings. And every time Buddy Hackett said a line that was so funny that the crowd was just screaming and howling, Buddy starts swinging his arm. And you could hear him snap his finger, just like I'm doing right now. And he would swing that arm, and the moment that applause started, or laughter started to go down, bang, he came right back in on the beat with the next line. And it was like and I said, that's like a metronome. So when I started rehearsing new material in my house, I found a metronome at a garage sale.
Yeah.
And here was a cheap, I paid $1 or $5 for it. And I took it home and I use it. And when I teach kids, I said, now let's work on your material. I said, do the line for me. And I go, you know, I'm looking at you at your age. You should have the metronome at this speed. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of guessed. And I said, try to do it and hear that in the back of your mind. I put the metronome behind them so they can't see it going back and forth. It's distracting.
Right.
But now you can get a metronome right on your iPhone.
That's
so
right.
You just turn it on, set it down someplace, and you hear that click, 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 and whatever your pacing is, that's what you rehearse to.
You know, I think I might try that idea, because I constantly speak too fast, and I've gone to Toastmasters and. Whenever I'm on
and
stage.
They're always saying, slow down, Scott, slow down, Scott. Well,
exactly.
Johnny Thompson was the guy that said to me, slow down, Fielding. I used to talk so fast that my voice used to go up, and it'd be so high.
Yeah.
And I have some of my old videos and everything, and you hear my voice go up, and it sounds like I sound like a eunuch. I mean, my voice is so high.
Mm-hmm.
And so Johnny said, if you slow down, you'll have more meter in your voice. And as I slowed down, I developed that sound that is Fielding West, and that became part of my character on stage.
That's an excellent idea. That's a really good suggestion, because, again, that I've tried to slow down, and that's the hardest thing.
I'm telling you,
the
metronome will help you, and I use this in my classes at my house. I'm teaching stagecraft to kids between the ages of 12 and 17. These kids come to my house. They bring an adult with them. It's a four-and-a-half-hour course. I stand them right up with a microphone, and I say, okay, 2 minutes. Look into the camera. You're going to give me a speech for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It can be about anything you want to talk about. I don't care if it's sports, if it's your career, what
it's
you're
talk.
Doing in school, but you're going to talk. Look into that camera for 2 minutes, and you're not going to stop. Of course, they panic. They fall apart. Some start crying. They do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go through the basic things of how they prepare themselves for the stage, how they walk on stage, how they breathe, how they hydrate themselves with water, stretching. There's a whole series of things, how they raise the volume of their voice, because that gives them more authority, how they use their eyes for eye contact, which gives them more authority on stage and more confidence. And so I start with some basic physical things, and then we go into the mental list of things that you talk about or you think about before you walk on stage. If you're thinking about what you're supposed to be thinking about, you don't have any time to have any stage fright, because you're preparing yourself just like somebody that's about to get in a plane, fly an airplane, get in your car. You don't think after a while how to drive your car, but when you learn to drive a car, okay, I've got to do this. I got to put the seatbelt on first. I got to lock the door. I got to check my mirrors. You know, I've got to look this way. And okay, before I crank the car, before I even back up, I got to turn around. I got to look here. I got to look. So there's a whole checklist.
There's
of things
you don't think about
that you don't think about
right.
now.
But
when you start, when you start to learn this process, so that you will be an effective, safe driver. If you want to be an effective, safe, responsible, and effective speaker on stage, you have the same checklist. So I give them a checklist. Once they get through that checklist, they don't have time to think about stage fright. So they go through the 4 hours. At the end, I have the same camera there. Here's the microphone. Look into the camera, and they're in front of their peers.
Completely.
And I said, give me a two-minute speech. I don't care what the subject's on, and you should see the difference. And I give them the beginning and what you learned, then the pamphlet of all the stuff we covered.
Yeah.
And I always have them bring an adult with them, for several different reasons. The adult gets the class for free. So I charge them $350 for 4 hours with me per kid. I have four kids at a time in my house, and I do this. I'm only doing it twice a month now. Well, the word's gotten out, so I'm getting, my neighbors are bringing over their high school kids because they want to get them ready for either college or for the military or for the workforce or this or that. So better communications, better pay.
Right.
You're going to be the leader, and that's what leadership's all about. You know this stuff.
Sure. So. Yeah, no, but I'm glad you're telling it to the people also.
Well, we can go out here and rehearse card tricks all day long. Right. We can rehearse. We can take dance lessons. We can take music lessons. We can have fashion designers make us beautiful costumes. We can get a lighting director. But all of this goes for naught if we don't have a delivery system. Mm-hmm. And I always compare this when I'm trying to teach a kid about public speaking. I said, the Pakistani people have an atomic bomb, but no one's really too worried about it because they don't have a missile to shoot it. See, they don't have a delivery system.
Yeah.
So the moment you get a delivery system, all of a sudden you're the kid that walks out on stage, or you're the young person, or you're the new person that walks out on stage. You got a delivery system, guess what? You walk out and everybody immediately will look at you. It's the way you carry yourself. It's your eye contact. It's the way you approach everything that you do.
Yeah.
And you don't rush, Scott. You don't rush. You take your time and you wait.
That's true.
Am I rambling?
You're
getting the whole course right.
No, because there are several things I wanted to jump in, but I didn't want to stop because there was important stuff. There was, Banachek had told me once before about, you know, not just slowing down, but he said, Scotty, you have a lot of good gestures, you know, that whenever you look at the audience. He said that if you just would study Jack Benny, he said that you got some of his looks, or Johnny Carson's, or certain things that you would say or do, rather the way that you would look, where you just stop and pause. He said, I think you get some of your funniest, biggest laughs and everything when you're really not saying anything. And I think it has a lot to do with pauses or slowing down, you know, that way. I was also going to say that, you know, you have we have microphones like this, or of course your cell phone or whatever else that you can record yourself, and that was something that was in Gene Anderson's part-time professional lecture that he used to give, of saying it's important to record every one of your shows, because you were talking about writing down lines and you don't forget. But sometimes you do forget those things, and then you go back and listen to that. But he was saying it because that if you record your shows, oftentimes you'll think, that wasn't a very good show. And then you go back and listen, say, well, I guess it wasn't too bad. And then you listen to it again, that was really good. And then the third time, well, that was pretty darn good.
Was pretty darn good. Yeah. And also our friend Bev Bergeron, who a lot of people remember Bev from when he started with Mark Wilson years ago as Reba the Clown. Bev Bergeron wrote a set of lecture notes to teach young performers the most important things that they needed to consider. Well, I thought, and his number one thing, I'll just say this, and then you'll realize how astute this man was. Bev Bergeron said, the difference between the amateurs and the professionals is the length of their pauses. Now, you'd say this to a kid, and he goes, what is a pause? Length of what? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. It means that you don't rush. You take the time. You say your line, you deliver it, or you deliver your concept. You deliver that thought, and then there's a pause. And that's why I found the best way to get those pauses is to use that metronome.
That will be helpful. There again, see, my wife will say to me that not only am I talking fast, but she said, I don't pause. She said, you know, you're stepping on your own laugh lines. Whenever that people are laughing, you don't give them a chance to continue their applause.
You have to allow them to soak it in and to enjoy you. And if there's a laugh there, you've got to hold it. You've got to hold that to let them get that laugh out.
You know, you got to just hit me. I think a point here is that if you do that too many times, you are now training your audience not to laugh too long or applaud too long.
Exactly.
You know, if you're cutting them off.
If you cut them off, then guess what? They'll fold their arms. They'll get frustrated, and they'll like you, but they'll like you less, and they won't even know why.
Yes.
It's only because you didn't allow them to be part of the experience.
Wow! You just opened my world.
Well, listen, and you've opened my world, and I hope anyone that's listening to this gets something out of it, because that's what this whole process is all about.
Yeah. Thank you, Fielding.
Scott, I got to run, but thank you very, very much for this time.
You're welcome. It's always enjoy our friendship. Maybe we'll get together and play some golf again.
So. You got it.
Yeah. We'll see you, buddy. Okay. That's Fielding West for the Magic Word. Scotty out.